The headlines this hour, the U.S. says large numbers of its troops will stay in Afghanistan after the planned drawdown.
Afghanistan in July of 2011.
A top U.S. military officer says America cannot afford to become isolated in the world. And the death toll in Pakistan's worst floods in decades tops 1,300 amid fears of cholera.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital, Tehran. You're watching another bulletin, World News on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. The United States says large numbers of its troops will stay in Afghanistan after the planned July 2011 drawdown.
I think we need to reemphasize the message that we are not leaving Afghanistan in July of 2011. We are beginning a transition process and a thinning of our ranks, and we will be there with a lot of troops.
Well, Gates says the drawdown depends on security conditions on the ground. More than 100,000 U.S. troops will be in Afghanistan by the end of the summer. Gates also said U.S.-led forces were making progress in the war. This is despite July 2010 being the deadliest month for American troops in the nearly nine-year war. Nearly 70 troops were killed in that month.
A top U.S. military officer has warned that U.S. economic difficulties should not lead to the country's isolation. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Mike Mullen said in a television interview that isolation would hurt the United States. He warned that withdrawing from the global arena would only be self-defeating. He said the U.S. is trying to strengthen relations with countries that serve as the world's economic engines, including India, Brazil and China.
Meanwhile, the death toll from devastating flooding in northwestern Pakistan has exceeded 1,300. Press TV's Zaid Hossain has the details.
In northwest Pakistan, the monsoon season with the worst floods in living memory has claimed the lives of hundreds of people, with thousands still missing in various parts of the region. According to the United Nations, around 1 million people have been affected, and reaching survivors is proving difficult as the roads and bridges have been swept away. Floods have stranded thousands, leaving them without enough to eat and drink. And what is worse is that the Met Office has forecast more rains in the next 24 hours. Officials fear that once access to the affected areas improves, the full picture will show that the situation is much worse than known so far. Pakistan's army and civil administration are coordinating their efforts in the rescue and relief operation. But as the whole province is in the grip of flood water, only few places could be reached by the rescue teams.
Some of our family members are still trapped, and they are waiting for rescue team to save their lives. But so far, no rescue work has reached there, and we fear it might be too late for them.
All of us have become homeless. We are left with only clothes that we are wearing. Our children have developed diseases. We don't have even drinking water, essential food items, and don't have electricity. We are living by ourselves.
Pakistani authorities have appealed to the international community for help to deal with the natural calamity, as the floods have left lives in ruins.
We are in dire need of assistance from the international community. We are trying to take the foreign media into the affected areas so that they can show the situation to the whole world. I again insist that we need help from the international community and particularly from our friendly countries.
The U.S. Embassy spokesman in Islamabad said it will assist in relief efforts by providing temporary bridges to help restore the communication in flood-stricken areas. There are also fears that with more rain forecast, some areas face further threats. Zahid Hussain, Press TV, Peshawar.
9 more people have been killed in clashes between Indian security forces and thousands of protesters in the disputed Himalayan region of Kashmir. The latest casualties bring the death toll to 32, marking the deadliest phase in the territory since June the 11th. Our correspondent Shahana Butt has more.
More protesters have been killed in the latest in a series of clashes between Indian security forces and anti-India demonstrators in Indian-administered Kashmir. The latest casualties mark the deadliest phase in the Muslim-majority Himalayan territory since June 11th, when turmoil erupted after a 17-year-old student was killed by a police tear gas shell.
There is people's anger on the ground, especially the youth who is born after 1989. They have not identified themselves with the Indian mainstream. So they are on road and they want that this dispute should be settled.
Security forces are said to have opened fire when thousands of residents in Bampur town, about 13 kilometers south of Srinagar, the summer capital of Kashmir, defied a strict curfew. The protesters blocked the region's main highway and hurled stones and a lump of concrete at security personnel. Residents said they were holding a peaceful protest against Indian rule when security troops opened fire.
We were protesting peacefully and they started firing on us. We have lost many lives so far. We want our Kashmir to be free.
However, security forces say they opened fire in retaliation for the attacks by stone-throwing mobs. Following the shooting, angry protesters attacked police and set 3 government buildings and vehicles ablaze. In Crewe town, protesters attacked a police camp, resulting in the detonation of the explosive kept there. Experts say Kashmir issue must be resolved politically if long-lasting peace is to be required.
Kashmir is a political problem and nobody can deny that. If it would not have been a political problem, then there would not have been so many wars between India and Pakistan. Then one part of Kashmir would not have been with China. Then one part of Kashmir would not have been with Pakistan. So it's a reality on the ground.
Kashmir is in a grip of 2 decades of unrest, which has left more than 47,000 people dead, according to official count. New Delhi has blamed what it calls separatist groups for instigating the unrest in the region.
The deaths of civilians at the hands of security forces has led to more public anger and resentment. Analysts warn that excessive use of force may eventually compel Kashmiri youth to once more take up to arms against Indian rule. Shahana Bhatt, reporting for Press TV in Indian-administered Kashmir.
The Iraqi parliament has once again failed to convene as political stalemate grips on the country. Here's more.
Iraq held key parliamentary elections back on March the 7th. 5 months on, the country remains without a new government. The country's political factions have failed to hammer out a coalition deal. They're bickering over who should be the next prime minister. Iraqi politicians have been holding talks to find a way out of the political deadlock. But every time they get close to reaching an agreement, violent attacks occur across the country. July became the deadliest month for Iraqis in the past 2 years. This after the Shia blocs emerged to have formed a new coalition. That could have led to the creation of a new government by now. Prime Minister Nouri Maliki's state of law, which came second in the March the 7th parliamentary elections, and a third-placed Iraqi National Alliance, announced their merger in June under a new name, National Alliance. The coalition has 159 seats in the new 325-seat parliament. The polls left former Prime Minister Ayad Alawi's Al-Iraqiya bloc with 91 seats, but unable to form a government on its own. Some blame the failure to form a new government in Iraq on lack of political will on the part of Iraqi politicians. But some others argue that there are efforts by the U.S. and its allies in the region to maintain the power vacuum in Iraq. The U.S. has announced that it will withdraw some 50,000 of its troops by the end of this month, but there are growing concerns that the political uncertainty would delay the U.S. military departure indefinitely.
You're watching World News here on Press TV. Time for a quick check of the headlines this hour. The U.S. says large numbers of its troops will stay in Afghanistan after the planned drawdown.
We are not leaving Afghanistan in July of 2011.
The top U.S. military officer says America cannot afford to become isolated in the world. And the death toll in Pakistan's worst floods in decades tops 1,300 amid cholera fears.
Still to come here on Press TV, Israeli ministers have approved a plan to deport the children of foreign workers. The details just ahead.
Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has condemned the recent sanctions against his country as a political game. Ahmadinejad said, quote, "The enemies are opposed to a developed Iran." He added that the enemies are plotting to portray Iran as a weak country through what he called theatrics. This, he said, is aimed at convincing the nation to back down. Ahmadinejad, in further remarks, said it would be a mistake to think that Tehran could ease pressures by retreating. The Iranian president said the nation must take advantage of such threats and turn them into opportunities.
At least three Russian policemen have been killed in separate attacks in North Caucasus region. A Chechen Interior Ministry spokesman said unidentified gunmen opened fire on a police patrol near capital Grozny. Two police officers were killed in the attack. Elsewhere in the Republic of Dagestan, east of Chechnya, a policeman died during an attack on his home. Russia has long been fighting against militancy in the Caucasus region. The new wave of attacks come as top Chechen rebel leader Doku Umarov appointed Aslambek Vadalov as his successor, citing health problems.
Turkey's pro-Kurdish party has held a rally in Istanbul against the government's constitutional plan. The current constitution was written by army generals in the 1980s. Our correspondent Jody Sabral joined the rally and asked why Turkey's Kurdish community is not supporting the judicial reforms.
Members of the pro-Kurdish Peace and Democracy Party have kicked off their campaign to boycott a planned September referendum on constitutional change in Turkey with a rally in Istanbul. Thousands of Kurds came to show their support. They stood for hours in boiling temperatures to send a message to the government that they are disappointed with the planned reforms.
People here told us that they do want reforms that will bring peace, but this referendum is not going to offer anything for Turkey's minorities, which is why they've decided to boycott it.
We are here to boycott the referendum. We are not supporting yes or no. The constitution is not reflecting us.
We want peace. We are here for peace. We want to stop the bloodshed.
As a party, we are not just fighting for Kurdish rights, but also for the rights of other minorities. We want a fair and democratic constitution.
Although the BDP has decided not to support the reform package, the package will provide key judicial reforms, allow civil servants the right to strike, and pave the way for the perpetrators of the 1980 coup to stand trial in a civilian court. The government says these reforms are necessary to protect and promote democracy. Turkey has been rocked by some of the worst civil unrest this week. Clashes between Kurdish youths and Turkish nationalists have been occurring almost nightly, but for today at least, the meeting was peaceful. Jody Sabral, Press TV, Istanbul.
Israeli ministers have approved a plan to deport the children of foreign workers who don't fit with what Tel Aviv calls its required criteria. The new plan only allows the children of migrant workers who have been in Israel for more than 5 years and speak Hebrew to stay. The plan, approved by the Israeli cabinet, will see 400 migrant children deported from Israel within 21 days. Hundreds of others threatened with deportation have been given 3 weeks to submit their documents to the Interior Ministry. Tel Aviv has come under fire by rights groups for giving workers such a limited period of time for the task.
Representatives from 25 countries are in the Austrian capital Vienna for the first Muslim-Jewish International Conference. The week-long event seeks to build mutual trust between the religions. Press TV's correspondent Eva Manasieva has all the details.
The first Muslim-Jewish International Conference gathered students from all over the world in the Austrian capital Vienna with one common goal: to raise awareness, promote tolerance, and enhance dialogue between the two religions. The idea for the conference was realized by young people together and make them talk to each other and, most of all, listen to each other.
Our main goal is to offer a platform where Muslims and Jews can sit down and speak about certain points and aspects in life and current events that they think and they feel about.
The Muslim-Jewish Conference is the first of its kind. It is also seen by those present here as the first step together for young people who want to know more about each other and clear off cultural misunderstandings and prejudices. Organizers are convinced that growing problems like Islamophobia or anti-Semitism come from insufficient knowledge.
I think it comes due to the lack of knowledge, due to a very bad information that both of us receive from the countries we live in, by the media we read, and because of never actually having the opportunity to speaking to each other and not about each other.
During the next 5 days, the participants in the conference will try to shatter the existing prejudices and find ways to work together for a better future. The organizers of the event remain determined to find the common language and hope that this conference could turn into an annual event. Eva Manasieva, Press TV, Vienna.
Malaysian anti-riot police and plainclothes officers have clashed with protesters. During their candlelight vigil, the protesters called for the repeal of the Internal Security Act, which allows indefinite detention of suspects without trial. Press TV's Mahiram Krishnan reports.
Malaysian police beat up and violently arrested protesters who had turned up to hold a candlelight vigil calling for the repeal of the Internal Security Act, or ISA, on its 50th anniversary. The act is described as draconian as it allows for indefinite detention without trial. Anti-riot police and plainclothes officers clashed violently with the protesters before they were arrested for what the police called as illegal assembly. Although human rights workers have alleged that the act is a violation of civil rights, the government has continuously said that it is necessary to maintain national security.
Those who are demonstrating with candlelights and so on should not put a pressure on the government, because it is unnecessary to go and disturb a demonstration. Not only it gives headache to the government, but unhealthy situation to the public, and it creates a nuisance.
Following initial arrests, the protesters took shelter in a shopping mall. More arrests were made as the protesters gathered outside the police headquarters to continue the vigil. The ISA was enacted in 1960 against the communist insurgency, and therefore human rights advocates and opposition politicians say that it is currently outdated its use. They also allege that the act is used by the government to curb dissent in the country.
Today is a very important day for Malaysians, because 50 years after independence, we still have in existence a law that allows detention without trial. And for the police to overreact in this way is even bigger disgrace. I think the police should learn some self-control.
A total of 30 people were arrested by the police. Currently, there are a total of 1,200 people detained without trial in Malaysia.
During a visit to Malaysia last year, the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention concluded that the Internal Security Act was open to abuses, including torture. The Malaysian government has said it will review the act, but whether or not it would do so remains to be seen. Maheshwari Ramakrishnan, Press TV, Kuala Lumpur.
Well, with that, we come to an end of world news here on Press TV. Don't forget to log on to our website, presstv.ir. For more details on these stories and a lot more, the website being updated every minute as we speak, news pouring in from across the globe.